Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor? 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
What do you got to say, Matt, about this whole sit and Lilar and communities, everyone?
Even just the idea that we live in a free country but can tell people it's illegal to sit on the ground is kind of ridiculous. That's just absurd.
It is absurd. There's absurdity there.
Definitely.
If you had one thing you'd like people to know about Matt's love for people that are down and out and just being part of the community, what would that be?
You gotta love everyone, man. We're all people. We're all humans. We all make mistakes and we all go through tough situations. But we're all, you gotta love everyone. Awesome. I'm not even a Christian myself, but I follow the belief that Jesus loves the poor and the meek just as much. In fact, often more than the wealthy.
Give me 5, man. Guillermo Mash here, welcoming you to the September 13th Without a Roof radio program. Going to be focusing on the cost of criminalization. You just heard a Without a Roof vignette that I produced back when this was part of the vernacular of local conversation within Chico and the surrounds in regards to coming up with a sit and lie ordinance. But we're going to be hearing from Jennifer Wilking, who was featured, her and her team of researchers, in an article called Cost of Criminalization that was in the CNR that published on September 7th. And we're also going to be hearing some follow-up from Paul Bowden, a friend of mine and a longtime advocate, activist, civil rights, human rights, executive director, Western Regional Advocacy Project, in this edition of the Without a Roof radio program. All right, Guillermo Mash here with the September 13th edition of the Without a Roof radio program here on KZFR 90.1 FM. And I'm real pleased to have in the studio here on Monday morning for a pre-record, Jennifer Wilking, Assistant Professor of Political Science and Criminal Justice at California State University, Chico. Welcome to the radio, Jennifer.
Thank you. Thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. So we're going to have a conversation with Jennifer and I today around the cost of criminalization for human beings in extreme poverty. And that framework for this conversation is going to be around a September 7th News and Review Newsline article titled Cost of Criminalization, Study Finds Increased Costs, Arrests Since Implementation of Sit-Lai Ordinance, which passed in late 2013. So to kind of give the context for our listeners who might not have seen the article, I'm going to read the first two paragraphs and turn it over to Jennifer. Local laws criminalizing aspects of living homeless have led to increased arrest and policing costs and pushed vagrancy issues out of Chico's center city and into surrounding neighborhoods. A recent study conducted by a group of Chico State experts suggests. The study titled Impact of Chico's Public Safety Approach to Homelessness Initial Analysis was released in June, and the team behind the research recently redoubled its efforts to disseminate the results, says political science professor Jennifer Wilking. Copies were sent to each member of Chico City Council last week. So why don't you just take it from there and fill our listeners in on more of the detail around your study and the work you've been doing, Jennifer.
Yeah, great. Thank you. So as you mentioned in that paragraph, we're calling this a public safety approach to homelessness rather than criminalization, but certainly that's how many people perceive this and talk about it. I am working with several other professors at Chico State, and this was mainly because this is outside of my area of expertise. I study poverty internationally, so I study development around the world. And so I brought in Professor Susan Roll from Social Work, Professor David Philauer, who is our statistics person, Professor Peter Hansen, who did some of the geographic information systems work, and Professor Holly Navarez, who had worked with the downtown business community on some surveys. I think it was actually, Bill, an event that you participated in, the People's Palooza, in January, maybe 15 or
so. January 2015, yeah.
Yeah, so I had just started on the North Valley Housing Trust board fairly recently at that point, and I was becoming more and more familiar with different approaches to homelessness. And that discussion that we had at that event with that panel around housing first really piqued my interest. And as a person who uses data in my professional life to understand things, I was jogging with Susan Roll the next week, and I thought, you know, we really need to understand our approach and the implications and effects of our approach. And then as I started to try to define what that meant, what is our approach, I really started to land on the sitli and these ordinances, because while we have multiple approaches to homelessness in Chico, that was the one that was getting the most focus and resources.
Yeah, that was passed in late 2013 for our listeners just joining. So what was the gist of your findings for this group and the basis for this CNR article?
So we focused on three things. The first was, what are the law enforcement implications? So how many tickets are they writing? But also we had this hypothesis that this was having a downstream or indirect effect. A person cannot get arrested for many of these ordinances as originally passed. But we suspected that this signaled to the police the desire of the community to have more enforcement of the homeless population, and that that would likely result in more arrests of individuals experiencing homelessness, even though you can't be actually arrested for getting a sitli infraction most of the time. So we looked at arrests over a period. We did a natural experiment. So we looked at arrests of homeless individuals before sitli and after sitli, with sitli coming right in the middle. And we found that with sitli implementation, arrests of people experiencing homelessness went way up. So to be more accurate there and specific, in the pre-sitli period, 21.6% of all arrests were of individuals experiencing homelessness. After that, it jumped up to 34.4%, and that's a statistically significant difference. The second thing we looked at was the geography of arrests. So you were around and you were part of the discourse around sitli. The constituency we heard from a lot was the Downtown Chico Business Association, or Downtown Chico businesses. And there were concerns, and this was substantiated in a survey, that they were concerned homelessness downtown was deterring business. So with the passage of sitli, we drew upon crime deterrence theory, crime displacement theory.
Yeah.
That argues when you put more police resources into an area, you're going to move certain types of crime. So we suspected that would likely be the case, that this was a signal that individuals experiencing homelessness shouldn't be in the downtown area. And we can't study that directly. Wouldn't be ethical, nor would we want to try to track people experiencing homelessness. So we did have in our data, though, arrests of homeless individuals. So Peter took the mean location by year of arrests of homeless individuals. And there's a neat map. I think it's printed in the article.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That shows that is gradually moving northward over time. So that's the second main finding. The third implication that we wanted to look at, because part of the motivation for sitli was financial, right? Downtown Chico businesses were said to be losing money, and the city was saying that they were spending a lot of money, and I think this is accurate, spending a lot of money cleaning up homeless encampments. So if it's financial, we then need to understand, in order to evaluate the policy, what we're spending on enforcing sitli. With that, we also include arrests of homeless individuals, the increase in arrests, because that went up after sitli. That's what our data show. So we estimate the costs of citing and policing, so writing citations, and we estimate the costs of arrests of homeless individuals over the period of study, which is 2010 to 2016. And we show that it's substantial cost. I think it comes out to about $138,000 a year. we recreated, or we used a different methodology, I should say, for the police department estimate for a certain period of time that they included in the 15-16 grand jury report. And our estimate is nearly double what they estimated they spent on arresting homeless individuals.
And even your assessment is on the low end in that you a lot of this information is not available when once there's an arrest that's made. So any of this stuff, move them along costs, you don't really capture, right?
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out, Bill. The other things that we leave out, so you're absolutely right, this is a drastic underestimate. We leave out jail, time spent in jail, because that's a county cost. But that's a big cost.
Yeah.
Our follow-up, I'd like to estimate that. We don't estimate and really aren't able to estimate with the data park ranger time interacting with individuals and ticketing mm-hmm. individuals experiencing homelessness because housing status isn't included in those tickets.
Yeah, I know when the Sit and Lie Pass was Mary Goloff, who was a council member at the time. She was no longer mayor, but she had quoted it. You said displacement. She used the balloon. You squeeze on mm-hmm. a balloon, the balloon just gets bigger mm-hmm. in some other spots. So she had made the comment and some of the other council members that all we were doing was pushing people from one place to another, and it seems like your study, that's what it bared out, correct?
Yeah, that's what we show in the study. And again, we're having to use a proxy of arrests of homeless individuals, and we certainly don't mean to imply by the study that all individuals experiencing homelessness are committing crimes, but we have to use and leverage the data that we have available, and the data that we have available in abundance is arrest records.
So how do you, I'm going to use the word reconcile, because in 2013 they passed Sit Lie, 2015 they passed this whole waterways ordinance,
mm-hmm.
which really did come down to we can arrest you if we feel as if mm-hmm. we need to, if you're in a waterway or you're sitting in any public area, pretty much any public area in Chico, you can be pushed along or moved along. How do you think that reflects in the data that you've seen? And I otherwise stated, people are getting arrested, but it might be for waterways as well as Sit Lie, correct?
Yeah, we would have to go back to the data and look at that more thoroughly. And that's really the next step. So one of the messiest parts of the data is the statute recording what people are actually being arrested for.
Yeah.
And so we actually now have a class and a research assistant working on cleaning up that data so that we'll be able to speak, you know, with much more accuracy and validity about what people are actually being arrested for. And then we can get into some of that more finite analysis of homeless individuals. What are they being arrested for most frequently? And we could even then give you a number on the time frame. One issue with that, Bill, is that we're not going to have a long time frame on the waterways, so we would have to update that data too. Yeah, and our data only goes through June 30th, 2016. So I'm hoping to update all of that data and get another year in there.
Well, that's probably good to know because I don't believe the waterways went into effect until calendar year 2016. So
okay.
The bulk of your data would have been just Sit Lie and not the waterways.
Yeah, and that's the one that we really focused on given the public salience and all of the debate around that issue.
Listeners just joining, we're talking with Jennifer Wilkin from Chico State University. Her and a team of folks have worked on looking at public safety and the impacts of coming up with laws around vagrancy / poverty and being destitute. Now, you had made a point that you wanted to make sure that people knew that when your tribe folks that are looking at, you're looking at public safety. I have a question for you in that, as a citizen, Jennifer, I'm really disappointed that health of the community isn't a priority. You know, when I look at homelessness, I see a huge, huge public health crisis,
mm-hmm.
and we have nothing on the city council, quote unquote, items to be working on that says health of the community. Isn't mm-hmm. this more, but maybe the direct question is, how much of this is safety versus health, and shouldn't we be focusing on the health aspect of it?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Bill. I think as I've learned more about this issue of homelessness, we did our study because, again, this has been Chico's approach, but I agree with you that we need to not look at this as a public safety phenomenon because, like I said, a very small portion of the homeless community actually commits crime. We need to be looking at it as a housing crisis and a health crisis. So I want to continue, and my team wants to continue doing research that could be helpful to the community. And so our next step is to have a community meeting and to say, where are the data needs? So we'll incorporate that discussion, and I think that discussion will be really helpful. But here's my prediction before that meeting is that we will be focusing on health. I've had some discussions with the CEO of Inlo, when we were starting this process last year, and they are bearing very high costs. Public health is looking at the costs of treating the homeless population, and we can be doing, in my non-scholarly opinion, a much better job on working on the health of this population and providing health care. So if we want to move forward, and that's really our goal, is to provide data that allows the community to move forward in an effective and productive way around homelessness. If we want to move forward, I think that we need to start leveraging some of what INLO and other entities are already spending around health and see how that healthcare could be delivered in a much more efficient way. For example, if people had housing.
Yeah, if they had some place to be. I know I've been involved with INLO. It's been a couple of years of trying to find places for folks to be discharged to. And a part of the dynamic that we don't talk about enough, Jennifer, is the impact of the workers at the hospital, you know, the compassion fatigue, secondary trauma. Because they literally, a couple of instances I were involved in, you could see that it was really weighing heavily on the people at INLO, that they had to discharge this person, you know, without a home.
Back to the street.
Literally back to the street. And certainly an ordinances wasn't going to help someone that was being discharged to the street from INLO.
No. Yeah. If you don't mind me talking about another project that we're working on. Susan Roll, Mariah Kornbluh, and I are team teaching a class. Well, more accurately, our classes are meeting together about half of the time this semester. And we spoke with Sherry Morgado and others in the community about what type of research our class should be doing. And it was actually Debbie Villasenor who gave us the idea about a survey of public perceptions of different approaches to homelessness. So she pointed out that the homeless population has actually been very well surveyed and probably over-surveyed, but that what we needed was more information about the general population's tolerance of different approaches to homelessness. Mm-hmm. So our goal is on Make a Difference Day, which I believe is October 28th this year. We're going to do two surveys, one of the homeless population or a sample of the homeless population, and one of a sample of the general population. That latter survey will focus on getting at people's understanding and perceptions and tolerance of approaches like providing housing for people being discharged from the hospital and maybe being discharged from jail, toleration of a homeless encampment, toleration of designated parking spots, toleration of a tiny village community. So we're going to put all of that on the table, design a survey to understand people's attitudes around it, and hopefully that'll be a starting point for a larger survey so that we can really understand what people desire and want. Because we know that a lot of people are concerned about homelessness, not just advocates and individuals working in the homeless community.
So have you figured out the dynamics of that as far as how many people you're going to survey and the breadth of how much of the city you're going to talk to?
Yeah, this will just be a pilot.
A pilot?
Right. So it'll be a convenient sample. We'll be downtown that day. We're also going to try to be at some locations outside of downtown, maybe Costco or some other big box stores. Certainly won't be a random sample, but our hope is that we'll nail down the survey questions and identify any problems in the survey questions so that we could then do a higher quality sample.
Sherry Morgado, you'd mentioned, Sherry used to be the housing manager here in Chico, and then she was she led the homeless task force for a period of time and then worked for a California Action Agency.
And she's now the
president
of the board, too, of North Valley Housing Trust.
Nice. Sherry's wonderful. And then you mentioned Debbie Villanzuela, who is, actually, I guess the best thing to attach her name to is she was heavily involved with the new apartments behind the Torrey Shelter for folks experiencing homelessness.
So Valley View, right?
Valley View Apartments.
W. Villasenor, Sherry Morgado, and Charisse Allen. I have to just give a shout out to those three for really doing so much work in the community, but also personally just providing me a crash course in homeless issues in Chico.
Yeah, and Charisse Allen was the coordinator for the most recent, extremely well-executed and documented homeless point in time. And speaking of, you can read the homeless point in time reports as well as the reports that Jennifer Wilkins' team has worked on. You can find them at the Butte County's Homeless Continuum of Care website at buttehomelesscoc.com. I think I was going to slip this in the last paragraph of the article that was penned in this current edition. Got one more day. Get on out there and read this article. But this is from Randall Stone, a council member, and he's currently the chair of the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force. But Randall Stone goes on to say, "You cannot cite your way out of vagrancy issues. Clearly, if other council members didn't get the message the first four or five times, and they've stood by and watched the consequences unfold, then they aren't going to accept it now. You can lead them to knowledge, but you can't make them think. Any comments on that? That ending for the article at Ken Smith Penn?
Yeah. I prefer to stay out of those political and potentially polarizing types of comments. I disagree with Randall that we can't make them think. I am going to continue to do evidence-based work to try to put that information out in the community, because I think that this is what we need to be doing to make informed decisions. And, you know, the city council we have now isn't the city council we're going to have forever. So we still, when the time comes that we can start acting on some of this stuff, we need to have good information. So my team and I are excited to get more community input and move forward. And I hope that we can get current city council members and leadership at this next meeting and get their input on the project so that we can better understand what the data needs from the perspective of the whole political gamut.
Yeah, my only comment on that is, doing this for 5 years, almost six now, is I haven't found inflammatory comments to be very effective as far as drawing people together around an issue. In other words, if you said to someone, we can lead you to knowledge, but we can't make you think, they're probably not going to hear anything you say after that, even if it includes free beer.
Agree that wasn't the most productive.
Closing comments, something we want to circle back on or something we may have missed?
I would just say that this is a type of research called community-based research. My co-author, Susan Roll, is the director of civic engagement at Chico State. And beyond this issue of homelessness, her goal is to really bring the community and Chico State closer together so that researchers and experts at Chico State are doing research that can be beneficial to the community. So if there are community members who have an interest in some other issue and feel like they could find a good partner at Chico State, the Office of Civic Engagement would be a good place to start.
Maybe one question I have, I'm thinking of all these different things that have popped up that I thought was worthwhile approaches. This is one that Sienna Soniki got excited about, and I don't have the information in front of me, but it was essentially a library where you could show up and you would have like a little dossier, a paragraph on a particular person, and then you would just come. Maybe you could do it in the Merriam Library, but you could literally go and walk and talk and sit down with someone that's experiencing homelessness one-on-one. And they did that for different social issues, but we thought that would be like a really good opportunity for folks that are interested to have an opportunity. Because most of the time you're talking in a group setting, or obviously that's not much information on what I'm describing. But what's your initial thoughts on something like that as far as educating folks and making them understand the issue, frontline issue, a little more?
Yeah, I think that would be a really neat idea. And, you know, it reminds me of a couple of approaches, so I may be misunderstanding the approach you're proposing. But I think we first need a day center in town, right, so that people who are experiencing homelessness can have a place to go. A larger place to go during the day. I was sad to see that coffee shop close down.
Yeah,
down
has
here.
Yeah.
Has been. Yeah. But the other idea that your idea reminds me of is a collection of people who are working on different issues of experts. And so with homelessness, that would be great to have a binder that you could get at the public library or at Merriam and find like who has what expertise as well as their contact information. But, you know, I think all elements of that idea that we have more interactions with individuals experiencing homelessness, more one-on-one conversations, I think all of that's really important. And another takeaway is that we need multiple approaches to homelessness. We need multiple different resources. It can't just be a public safety approach or just a medical approach. This is a complex issue and we need a lot of different things.
Yeah, since Paul couldn't make it for our conversation, one of my favorite quotes from him is, nothing ends homelessness like a home. So for our listeners, unless you're housed, you're always homeless. I mean, the only solution to homelessness is housing. And I think we really get caught up in that dynamic, which was, going back to the beginning of the interview, that was what the whole Poor People's Palooza was about, going, this is an affordable housing issue above and beyond anything else.
That's why we need this type of evaluative research, so we know what we're spending on the problem of homelessness right now, because we're spending a lot of money, even though it might not look like it. And we need to pool and redirect all of, you know, those resources that we're already spending and put it into housing. And so that's really what people like Pendleton and Paul Lambros, a CSU Chico alum who works on this issue in Seattle, are pushing. And so I agree with your friend Paul.
All right, listeners, just joining you, we're just listening to Jennifer Wilking, Chico State professor, who was involved in a very interesting and important research project that is spotlighted in this week's Chico News and Review that published on September 7th called Cost of Criminalization. Guillermo Mesh here for the September 13th edition of the Without a Roof radio program. From the previous message, we talked about my friend Paul, and we do have my friend Paul, Paul Bowden, Executive Director, Western Regional Advocacy Project, on the phone to add a little insight to some of the things that Jennifer Wilkins said and put some color on it for the state of California. Thanks, Paul, for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So get a little bit of insight on what Jennifer Wilkins had said from your perspective.
I very much think that fact-based research that challenges the assumptions that are being made, that documents what is in fact happening in people's lives so that we can cut through the perception and the race and class issues that so dominate the discussions around homelessness. Homelessness is not a DNA issue. It's not people's chromosomes changed in 1982 and we decided, oh, this indoor living isn't for me. I want to go sleep outdoors. I mean, I think it's unfortunate. I know you guys had a problem with the guy's statement at the end of the article, but I have that same level of frustration that he's expressing. You know, if people looked at us as human beings, we may not need all of this research. If we just looked at basic human dignity, that housing, access to health care, access to a quality education, a healthy, housed, and educated community are good things, are to be valued, are to be cherished. Then the UC Berkeley report, the Chico report, the Seattle University report, the Denver University report, the Yale Law School reports, we probably wouldn't need these because people would be being treated as decent and as human beings.
I think people can tend to get a little bit frustrated or feel like maybe it's hopeless, but I thought it was really neat how Jennifer kind of had formulated the idea to do something fact-based, based on that event that you helped us produce a couple of years ago called the Poor People's Palooza and Film Festival. So I'm reaching out to listeners to let you know, get involved in the issue, man. You may not think you're making a big impact, but you are. Reach out to one person and make a difference and get involved in some of these activities. What would you say around that, Paul?
Absolutely, because I think that's how we got to be building our community, is everybody has something to contribute, and that includes homeless people. Everybody should be concerned about racism in America, and everybody should be doing what they can to address it. Everybody should be concerned about income inequality in the United States, and everybody should be contributing something to try and address it. You know, what's that old saying? It doesn't matter what you do so long as you do something.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's so true. And if somebody can be convinced through a spiritual sermon, then use the bully pulpit of the church. If somebody is more easily convinced by looking at research, then use research. The thing I love about working with the Berkeley students, and I'm sure this was true for the Chico crew as well, is to see the research actually being used to facilitate community change. It's not just a report that gets written that sits on a shelf. It's a report that gets written that then goes out into the community and creates change. That can be true for a song or for a piece of artwork or for a radio show.
Exactly.
Or for some videos. It moves, and it moves somebody. That person then connects to it, uses it, and hopefully they move others with it as well.
All right, so concludes the September 13th edition of the Without a Roof radio program. Thank you to our guests, and thank you to our listeners. And go on out and hit the tip jar, kzfr.org, if you like what you heard. Help support people-powered radio. And also find more about Without a Roof, man. Google us, Without space A space roof. We come right to the top. Check us out. YouTube, Tumblr, Facebook, beyond.